I was listening to TV, wasn't watching it, and it's the educational channel, National Public Television. A few weeks back, I don't know if any of you saw this, but it was a doctor, and he was a doctor at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. Now, it sounds like a strange name, doesn't it? Brigham, nothing to do with Brigham Young, by the way. It was a doctor whose last, two doctors whose last name was Brigham. And these hospitals that were in the Boston area. And then there was a Boston Women's Hospital. And they all combined and then became part of the Harvard Medical Center. So Harvard has used it now as a teaching hospital. And connected with it are oncology centers and things like that. But anyway, a doctor who was on there, I heard him comment that it's so difficult to tell somebody that you're not going to survive. And as a matter of fact, the problem he had was that he admitted, I've lied to people. I just tell them lies because they are not ready for me to tell them the truth. So that was interesting enough. I stopped. I thought, this is interesting. I mean, I run into people who know they're going to die and they accept it. And then others who, doesn't matter what their age is, when suddenly they're confronted with the fact when the doctor says you aren't going to make it, they're stunned. But he commented how stunned people are. They're just shocked. It doesn't matter what their age is. But there, he mentioned a specific case where there was a young mother, and this young mother, she was still pregnant, and she wondered, will I be here to take care of my baby? And she was very concerned about that. And this doctor said, I lied to her. I could not tell her that, no, you're not going to be here to take care of your baby. Matter of fact, they couldn't do a C-section because they knew she would die in the C-section. And you'd say, well, and she died soon after anyway. But this doctor, it bothered him so much, he got the husband in there and he said, I just really feel bad about it, but I lied to you and your wife. I knew she wouldn't survive. And they couldn't do a C-section, so they had to do it, a vaginal delivery, which was very painful for her in her condition. And then she didn't live many weeks afterward. But he said, I just couldn't tell her, I couldn't tell you the truth. But we knew she wouldn't survive. So he went to another doctor, a woman, who's an oncologist in the oncology department. It's right across the street, and there's one of these little flyways to the oncology center from the main hospital. This was a young woman doctor. She had chosen a niche of oncology that deals with a certain type of brain cancer that is over 90% fatal. It's just almost always fatal, if not 100%. And he went to her because he knew she was dealing with people who weren't going to live. If you can survive 5 years, they weren't going to survive 5 years. And his thought was, how does she tell people? What does she tell them? Does she say, no, I'm sorry, we never saved anybody with this type of brain cancer. We might give you some months, maybe a year. But can you do that? And they actually showed video of her and her chief nurse, a woman, who dealt with him, trying to tell a man that he was going to die. But they couldn't fully do that. So the doctor said, well, in a worst case scenario, it'll be just a couple of months. But then the nurse said, well, in the best case scenario, it could be longer than that. And they and the nurse later said, if the doctor had said the worst case scenario, I would have said the best case scenario. And if she had said in the best case scenario, I would have said in the worst case. So they had this, it's almost like policemen, where you have the good cop, bad cop. One of them would, because they couldn't just come out and say, okay, I'm going to be the bad doctor. We're going to just tell you, you're not going to make it. Because people are not ready to hear it. And this patient had heard about a trial that was being done at the hospital with an experimental drug. And said, I heard about this, I read about this experimental drug, I'd like to be part of the program. Well, it wasn't a drug that was for that kind of cancer, and the doctor knew it wouldn't help. But she said this, we'll go ahead and we'll do it, but not as a part of the program, but as part of a compassionate, what word she used, I don't remember, but it was to be compassionate. In other words, she knew it would not help, that he was going to die, but he was not ready to die emotionally. Now, I bring that out because all of us know we're going to die. We all know that. But it won't be today. But we know it's coming. But it's like, well, it's not today. It's not tomorrow. It's not this week. It's not. And I see sometimes, and I knock no one, but I have seen members who have come up to the end of their lives, and sometimes they're shocked, and some aren't shocked at all. It's like, well, I knew it was going to come. And they have no problem. They say, I don't have a problem with it. I don't have a problem. Although all of us, we anointed and prayed for Sue, and she made a comment that is very common with all of us. She has a growth in her spine and showed me the x-ray of it. And you could see it's cutting off her spine. And they're going to do radiation on it, try to take the pain away to stop it from causing problems. But she made a statement I think all of us would agree with. She said, I'm not afraid of death. It's what comes before. Or as I told her, it reminds me, and I've quoted this before to you, I wish I was the one who thought of this, but I'm not. He said, I'm not afraid of dying. I just don't want to be there when it happens. And I think we're all that way. I mean, it would be nice to be like Dallas Davis. I don't know how many of you remember Dallas Davis. Yes. His wife wasn't well and he was in good health and he just didn't wake up one morning. She woke up in the morning and he was in bed there with her and he was dead. And then, Thelma, they had no children, and she was just, her whole life had been built around Dallas, and she was one of the two most miserable widows I've ever known. The other was married to Bertie Bennett. What was her name, first name? Up in Gallatin? Anybody remember her first name? No. Her husband was Bertie Bennett. Olga, yes, thank you. Who said that? There you go, right there. Thank you. Olga Bennett and Thelma were the two most miserable widows I've ever known because they had no children, they had no family, and their whole lives were built around their husbands. But Carol And this is a long introduction, but Carol Vernich and Lucretia and I went out, and I don't know what all we were going to do. We were going to clean Thelma's home for her. John Paul and Pat went out often and cleaned and mowed the yard in the summer. But this was, maybe it wasn't the summer, I don't remember what time of year, but we were going to go out and clean the home. And I don't know when Carol had talked to her, maybe that morning, but to see, she couldn't get up out of her chair and left the door in the breeze, in the car park open into the kitchen. Well, being a gentleman, Carol and Lucretia went in first and walked through the kitchen. You come to the hall. And if you make a left, you go to the bedroom. Make a right, it goes to the living room. And they both stopped when they got to that hall and would not go into that living room because she was sitting there, you know, like this and making, and we had made noise and she was not paying any attention. So they stood back, didn't want to go in. And I went in and I put my hand on her arm and I knew she was dead. It was cold. But just the same, I shook her arm and then said, "Thelma, Thelma." Well, we call 911. And when we had that funeral, because she kept saying she wanted to die and be buried by her husband. And on the way to the gravesite, Lucretia said, "I'd love to tell her, Thelma, in just a little bit, you're going to be where you wanted to be." She wanted to be there in the grave beside Dallas. She didn't want to live. Now, I bring this up because I want us to think of how God looks at death. How death really is. Not the way we as human beings tend to emotionally react to it. People are afraid of graveyards and dead bodies. Lucretia and Carol finally came in. They did come in. And there's more that went on after the police and the sheriff showed up, but I won't cover that right now. But they did come in there. If you think about it, it's not people, dead bodies that we should be afraid of. It's people who are alive who are scary. They're the ones who can hurt you. I want to turn to Philippians chapter 1, verses 20 through 24. I have had times I've gone to many who are dying and know they're dying. It's hard to finally reconcile that you're going to die. J.R. Williams would say he'd know he's going to die and then he'd be making plans for the future. So it was kind of hard for him to say, "Well, no, I won't be doing this." It was always, "Well, we need to do this. Well, what if we can get on satellite radio? What if we can do this or do that?" It was always plans for the future, even though. But when he finally got to the place I went by, and I think this is one of the verses I read to him. I read a number of scriptures to him, to Grady White, to others, to go by and read to them. I sang to J.R. anyway. He liked my singing. I think most people, I could come and sing hymns to them, and that would encourage them to die. They'd say, "Let me out of here. You know, life is not worth living if Fred's going to sing to me." Philippians chapter 1, verse 20. "According to my earnest expectation and hope, that in nothing I shall be ashamed, but with all boldness, as always, so now also, Christ will be magnified in my body, whether by life or by death." Now, I've known people where they looked like they were going to die and they lived another 5 years. And just where we thought, well, this person's going to be gone. I know that even with Mr. Peyton Hendricks, that, I mean, even the hospice nurse thought he wouldn't live 24 hours. And the next day, they heard noise and came in, and he was sitting up, and he said, "I'm hungry." And I don't remember how much longer he lived after that. It wasn't too long, but, I mean, the nurse thought he wouldn't live 24 hours. He'd be gone by morning, and there he was, sitting up. Here's Norma sitting right here, went in there, and he said, "I'm hungry." So you never know. But he's saying, whether I live or whether I die, I just want to glorify Jesus Christ and let him be magnified. Verse 21, "For to me to live is Christ, and to die is gain." What a statement. To die is gain. He looked forward to dying in the flesh. Well, there's a good reason. If you remember, I'm not going to turn to it, but Paul did write in 1 Corinthians 15, verse 50, "Flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God." That means not one of us in this room, not one of us can be in God's kingdom, because you're in the flesh and so am I. So you're not ready to inherit the kingdom. This flesh that I'm in and the body that you're in, if it doesn't die, either to go to the grave or ashes or changed in a moment in a twinkling of an eye, still the body has to die. We cannot inherit the kingdom of God in this flesh. I want to be in God's kingdom. But in order to be in God's kingdom, I got to get out of this body. Now, I don't have an immortal soul to get out of this body, but I do have a spirit that doesn't think without a body, but God can put my spirit into a spirit body and it will think. I'll think again. So he says, to die is gain. Now that's a pleasant way to look at God's kingdom. To get rid of this flesh. To say, yeah, it's been okay, but you know, there are some things about my flesh that aren't all that pleasant. And frankly, to get out of the flesh will be a blessing. And that's what he was looking at. I'm ready to get out of this flesh. And then he says, verse 22, "But if I live on in the flesh, this will mean fruit from my labor." That is, as long as I'm in the flesh, at least I can serve. Now, that's the only reason he wanted his flesh to live. You know, a lot of us want to be saved in the flesh. Well, I want the doctor to do this, or I want God to do this. I want God to heal me. God can deliver us. Matter of fact, he delivered Daniel from the lion's den. Wasn't that wonderful? What happened to Daniel? Where is he? He's dead. It was a short-term delivery. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were saved from the fiery furnace. They're dead. God used David and saved him from Goliath. He's dead. So living on in the flesh is such a short moment. And he's looking at it and he says, well, if I live in the flesh, he can only think of one positive reason to stay alive in the flesh. He can only think of one positive thing about living on in the flesh, and it was fruit from his labor that he could still serve. But other than serving, he was ready to get out of the flesh. Yet what I shall choose I cannot tell, for I am hard pressed between the two, having a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. Now we know to depart and be with Christ would not be that he would instantly go to heaven. But it would seem instantaneous. It would seem to be instantaneous. That is, you're there in the flesh and it's nasty. Maybe you're afraid of dying and then things black out and all of a sudden there you are rising in the air. No pain ever again. Never too cold, never too hot, never too tired, never tired. It's not a matter of not being too tired, never tired. God says that your right hand are pleasures evermore, the psalmist said to God. At God's right hand are pleasures forevermore. Pleasures forever. So I can understand why he had a desire to depart and be with Christ, which is far better. No constipation, no diarrhea, no hemorrhoids. Ooh, yeah. No stomach upsets. No headaches, no migraines, no waking up in the middle of the night, having to go to the bathroom 2, 3, 4 times. No more menstrual cycles. Well, you may... A lot of the ladies are past that anyway, and all the men are. So, no PMS. Nevertheless, verse 24, to remain in the flesh is more needful for you. He could only think of one reason to even think it'd be nice to continue living. Only one reason. Now, we often think, I've heard of people who dreamed, and they dreamed it was time for the resurrection. Christ was coming, and he was there, and all around him, this person would go, that person would go, and another one would be going up in the air. And he said he was going like this, trying to get himself to get up and go, but he wasn't going. Everybody else is going, and he's jumping, trying to make himself go, and he wasn't going. I really like Matthew 24, verse 31. I think it's very comforting. It's very comforting, because, I mean, I think I mentioned this to J.R., is Matthew the point? I don't think I turned to it, but I just mentioned the point. Matthew 24, verse 31. It says, and he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. And what I like about that is when you rise up, you wonder, well, now what do I do? See, so, well, JR, there's going to be an angel there saying, JR, come with me. So now you can You don't have to worry about what to do. You just let this angel tell you what you need to do. You need to follow me. I want to take you to where you need to go. Because I'd think, well, where should I go and where should I won't say stand, but hover. Where should I hover? Should I go up here or, you know, suppose we can ask a question. Is there anything I should be doing right now? Tell me. And you've got an angel, and there are millions of angels. Thousands times thousands, it says. So there are millions of them. There'll be plenty enough for the resurrection that everybody could have an angel to themselves to tell them what to do. I would like that. That just sounds wonderful. Things are looking bad, and all of a sudden there you are coming up, and there's an angel there saying, Fred, come with me. Maybe take me by the spiritual hand and lead me to be where I need to be near Jesus. Saying, well, now, wait, we're going to do something before you go up to... Yeah, you can talk to him, but just wait, not just yet. But we're going to do something else first. And then you can go up and talk to Jesus. Just take your time, your turn. Wait your turn. Let's turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and start in verse 16. I want to read not only chapter 4, but go on into chapter 5 and read the first four verses of 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 16. That'll be 16, 17, 18, then just jump right into chapter 5. And read the first four verses. As we get older, and the people in the front row wouldn't know this at all, over in this front row, you guys would know. You just can't do the things you used to do. I still try to get out and jog, and my jogging has gotten shorter and shorter and shorter and slower. And slower and slower. I mean, I used to jog my entire subdivision twice. Took me 36 minutes to do it twice. Now just the two little courts take me 7 minutes, and some days I can get up to eight, go a little further and do 8 minutes, and I'm breathing hard. Verse 16, therefore we do not lose heart, even though our outward man is perishing. Anybody in here over 50, you're perishing. That's the good news. The bad news is it may take you 30 or 40 years to do it. That's the bad news. Maybe longer. The outward man is perishing, yet the inward man is being renewed day by day. I hope the inward man is being renewed day by day. I hope your inward person is being renewed day by day. I can still pray. I just can't kneel all the time. Now, it used to be no trouble to kneel for periods of time. Now, after 20 minutes, sometimes rare moments, 30 minutes, and my legs are cramping, and I've got to get up. And let me tell you, getting up is a process after kneeling for 20 minutes. And then I'll sometimes say, Father, I'm just going to have to finish this prayer sitting down. Can't do it. But the inward man can still have a relationship with God and be renewed day by day, no matter how old we get. Now that's good news. And as the body falls apart, that's not bad news, actually. So we don't lose heart. For our light affliction. Now, let me tell you, we look at some people and we say, wow, that's not light affliction. That's heavy affliction. Dorothy McDonald, who may be listening in, has got affliction. We did have a prayer request for Helen Price. And Helen is, I think, what did I say, 84? I looked it up. 84? And she's a member, lives north of Jackson up at Martin, Tennessee. She's a widow, lives alone, always was faithfully there at Jackson and said, I'm going to come as long as I can. But she's gotten to where she can't really come anymore. And except she does try to make it on holy days. And she'll come down and stay with Diane Brimmer. But she's gotten to the place where just to walk from one, she had a little tiny house in the country. Just to walk from one room to another, she's exhausted. And so Diane calls her on the Sabbath and lets her listen in over her speakerphone. And Diane called me and said, please put out a prayer request for her. And I sent it out on email. And she said, let people know that it would really encourage Mrs. Price if people would send her a card. But she is discouraged and she's doing worse. And she doesn't want to go to a nursing home. She doesn't want to leave her house that she was married to her husband. I performed his funeral quite a while back, but I forget how many years they were married. 50 some, maybe 60. Would you think of that as light affliction? And yet, apparently Paul felt that's light affliction. Why? Because he's comparing it with getting out of the flesh and being spirit. That even if we live to be over 100, like Mrs. Eleanor Allen, who I assume is listening in. I can remember going to see her and she could get up and get around, walk around the house. Now you go to see her, she's in bed. Over 100 years old. And reminds me of an old man. He was 103, I think it was, over in the Boise and the Little Rock congregation. And people, he was a very short man. He was Polish, and I can't remember his name, born in Poland. And people would say, what's it like to be over 100? And he'd say, it's no good. I haven't felt good since I was 80. But he was tough. They had an ice storm, and he went out and fell 3 times trying to go somewhere, walking. And didn't break a bone. Our light affliction, which is but for a moment. This life is just but for a moment. Is working for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. That is, there is glory. No pain, no suffering, no flesh to hurt, no cancer, no heart disease, no arthritis, No gout, which I get a little gout in my left foot every now and then. Not bad, but not like some. Far more exceeding and eternal. Look, what he's doing, he's comparing this life to eternal weight of glory. So this life is just but for a moment. Just for a moment. While we do not look at the things which are seen, what do we see? Well, we see this building and each other and traffic and Syria, little children being drowned, trying to cross over into Greece. We see little children being bombed to death. Horrible things in this life. How many, what is it, every 30 seconds or something like that, another child dies from malaria? So, we don't look at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen, the house, the car, this building, each other, as far as the flesh, your flesh, mine, the things which are seen are temporary. They're just for a moment. But the things which are not seen are eternal. And that's the kingdom of God. And that's the spirit body that you will have. I mean, can you... Isn't it hard to imagine what you will look like in the kingdom and the glory? I mean, if you look in a mirror in the kingdom, face shining, brilliant. David and I would have hair on our heads. And Mike would have hair on his head. He's already got white hair, but it would be on top too. So, and a few others around here that would have it. But he says, the things which are not seen are eternal. That's an eternal body. Eternal. So it's hard to see that body. We just have to imagine it. Now, chapter 5, verse 1. For we know that if our earthly house, this tent... Now, I almost hesitate to say how many of you would enjoy just living permanently in a tent, because there would be a few people who'd raise their hands who might say, man, I'd rather live in a tent than a house. Nice thing about a house is the air conditioning in the summer and the heat in the winter and the flush toilet and the shower. But tents don't come with those things, although Lucretia and I were in a tent once that actually had a flush toilet and a shower and a bidet. And the front row is saying, what's that? Anybody happen to know what that is? No? You might know. You're smiling, so I'm wondering if you know. You don't want to say that you know. Okay. Well, ask your parents what it is, and they may not know either, so they can come ask me. But this was in Kenya, and it was in one of those game parks. And we were in a tent with a wooden floor, and it had a separate room with a full bathroom, including a bidet. But I'll tell you what, other than that, tents don't normally come with flush toilets and showers and bidet. And they don't. At this one, someone showed up and zipped, opened the tent, and came in with a tray with tea on it and cups. And then we went out to a beautiful, I think we actually went out to look at the game first and then came back for breakfast. Is that right? Did we go look, or did we? Yeah, she's nodding. So when I say she's nodding, she's either saying yes or she's falling asleep. So we know that if our earthly house, this tent, that's all it is. Tents don't last. This tent is destroyed. You're in a tent. It's going to be destroyed. We have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Eternal. Verse 2, for in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed with our habitation which is from heaven. That is a body, a spirit body. Now that's something to earnestly desire. That's something to really want. Not this flesh. And as long as we're in this flesh, we can't be in the kingdom. This body cannot be in the kingdom. Because flesh and blood does not inherit the kingdom of God. So somehow I got to get rid of this body to be in the kingdom. And Paul felt selfishly, the sooner the better. But he thought, unselfishly, better for me to stay around a while where I can serve you. Verse 3, if indeed, having been clothed, that is, if we receive the spirit body, we shall not be found naked. We're going to have a spirit body. Verse 4, for we who are in this tent groan. There's a lot of groaning that goes on in the flesh. A lot of suffering. A lot of pain. A lot of tiredness. It's just a constant effort to keep the body going. Especially as we get older and older. It's just taking care of this and taking care of that and taking care of something else. We who are in this tent groan, being burdened. Not because we want to be unclothed. It isn't just that we want to get rid of this body, although that may be part of it. But further clothed. We want the spirit body. That mortality may be swallowed up by life. This flesh is not truly life. You might say it's life. Well, yes, and over here on the side, for those who are listening in, we got some flowers. And those flowers, as long as they're kept watered, will last about a week before they all turn brown. Pretty. I love zinnias. And came out of all of those, none of those were planted by human hands. I planted 2 years ago, and then they reseeded last year, and then they reseeded themselves this year, and they all just came up too thick. Now I had to thin them out. This is part of my thinning out this mass. But look, further clothed that mortality may be swallowed up by life. Those flowers are going to be gone and they won't seed the garden because I took them out. But they're all going to turn brown and our bodies are all going to disappear. But Mortality for us can be swallowed up with life. Eternal body. We want that body that God gives us from heaven. Okay, just looking at my watch. I just want to remind you of the scripture without turning to it. I'll tell you where it is, though. It's often mentioned at funerals. It's Psalm 116, verse 15, where it says, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints." And I'll tell you, perhaps the most wonderful days of my life, yes, and Lucretia's, the birth of our child. Every now and then it just absolutely stuns me. There will be somebody receiving an award. Maybe some, football player, or they win the Vince Lombardi trophy. So they have won the Super Bowl. They'll say, "This is the most wonderful day of my life." And I'm thinking, do you not have any children? How could anything equal the birth of a child? You know what equals the birth of a child just as wonderful? The birth of a grandchild. Wonderful. But just like that tiny little Isaac up here, just smushed up against his daddy, all snuggled up, and the Breedloves brought a grandchild, brand new grandchild there. So, although brand new, big enough to smile. See, smiling at granddaddy. Granddaddy was really total putty. What could be more wonderful than a birth? And yet here it says to God something is really precious in his sight. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. Because they cannot be lost. It's like money in the bank. No way to fall away. And God can see the resurrection. For us, we have to sort of take some time to think about it, but he can see it. Or another one that we often read is Isaiah 57 and verse 1. And I'm not going to turn there. The one I read was Psalm 116 verse 15, "Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints." But Isaiah 57 verse 1, "The righteous perishes." Not just evil, righteous men perish. We remember Peter and James were in prison in Jerusalem. Or was it in Caesarea? Anyway, I think it was Jerusalem. And Herod killed James. That's one of the 12 apostles, Apostle James, not the one who wrote the book of James. And the angel came and got Peter out. Which one was better off? Well, God may say, James, never suffered again. Peter got to live and die. He was hung upside down and crucified according to tradition. That appears to be true. He was crucified upside down. Actually, apparently he requested to be crucified upside down because he said, "I'm not worthy to be crucified in the same way as my Lord." So it is apparently fairly substantial historical record that did happen. Now, James was better off. He probably was beheaded. So, and he was gone, and they'll both be in the resurrection. The righteous perishes, and no man takes it to heart. Merciful men are taken away. I'm still reading Isaiah 57:1, not encouraging you to turn. While no one considers that the righteous is taken away from evil, James had the easy death. But they'll both come up to the glorious resurrection. The glorious resurrection. In 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12 and 13. 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 and 13. First Peter 4, verse 12. Beloved, do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you as though some strange thing happened to you. Now, there have been some things that seem very strange to us that God has allowed His children to go through. And they are fiery trials. Boy, I've prayed. I've thanked God for the way Dallas Davis died. I mean, he just didn't wake up. And I've thanked God. I say, boy, I'd really like to go that way. Are there others who just were sitting there and there was Manila Queen who was just sitting there in the chair and she had the news out and the TV was going and she just went to sleep. And I've heard of others who had the same thing. And at least Thelma apparently didn't suffer any at the last because she was just sitting there in her chair and apparently died in her sleep. You know, you can tell whether somebody died in their sleep or not. Their eyes are closed. If they're not asleep when they die, their eyes stay open and somebody comes along and closes them. But her eyes were closed. So she was asleep. But she had some trials before she died. She didn't feel well. That's why people went out to help her. Do not think it strange concerning the fiery trial which is to try you. And we have a lot are going through trials. We can sit here and go through them person after person after person. And it seems strange, but don't think it strange, as though some strange thing happened to you. But rejoice to the extent, not in the actual suffering, but rejoice to the extent that you partake of Christ's sufferings. He suffered, we suffer. That when His glory is revealed, you may also be glad with exceeding joy. That's to look forward to. That when Christ comes, He will remember. He remembers our suffering. God's going to come down and wipe away the... I'm not going to turn to that scripture in Revelation 21, verse 4, my favorite verse, where there'll be no more suffering, no more death, no more tears. I generally finish every funeral with that, or graveside. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 9. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 9. There are more verses that I won't get around to. Verse 3, blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. To an inheritance, now see He has begotten us again. We've been begotten again, not just from when our parents had us, but we've been begotten again with His Spirit, God's Spirit, to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Jesus said, if I go not to my Father, the Spirit won't come. But he did was resurrected, and he did send the Spirit. Verse 4, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled that does not fade away, never be gone. It's eternal. It's eternal, out of the flesh, will never fade away, reserved in heaven for you, who are kept by the power of God through faith. We're looking through faith to something to come for salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. We tend to see the flesh, and we see today, and we see our bodies falling apart and the aches and pains and troubles and headaches and everything else ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, and life is just for a little while. If need be, you say, I don't really need this. I don't need this headache. I don't need this cancer. I don't need this heart disease. I don't, you know, whatever it is, I don't need it. Seems like it. Though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. Now see, there's the nice thing about death of the flesh. There will not be any more grief through trials. They're gone. Over. Forever. Verse 7, that the genuineness of your faith, and it takes faith to get through the trials that not only we go through, that people who we have loved have gone through, Lee Robinson went through, J.R. went through. You know, Herman Williams, he went through a grievous trial that last 24 hours. It was pretty rough. They gave him some medicine, really helped. The medicine itself probably hastened his death. But it sure relieved a man who was in pain, throwing up. So there's some various, grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, and some of those men who lived longer, like Lee, the genuineness of his faith had to shine through for quite a long while. And it did. Being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire. And by the way, the wives of those men went through the same trial with him, just as hard. Though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise. That's what's waiting for Lee. We could name all the others. To Charleston, to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ, whom having not seen you love. We never saw Jesus in the flesh, but we love him. Though now you do not see him, yet believing you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith, the salvation of your souls. So it can be rough. The other verse I was going to read is that Romans 14, verse 7 to 9. None of us lives to himself. No one dies to himself. For if we live, we live to the Lord. And if we die, we die to the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or we die, we are the Lord's. Isn't that nice? Whether we live or we die, we're the Lord's. I hope God's words are encouraging to all of us, and we look past this disgusting flesh.